Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the EDG Sports Network, home of the Unsung Sports Grid. Visit us at edgsports.com and follow us across the socials for up-to-the-minute sports news. This podcast is the property of EDG Sports LLC. Now, it's time for the show.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School podcast. Chicks and Crow here for you on blogtalkradio.com. It is just about 4 o'clock, actually 4 o'clock on the nose, according to my computer, on July 21st of the year 2021. We're going to talk a little baseball today. So in just a few moments, we'll be joined by the radio voice of the San Francisco Giants, David Fleming, who we know back in our score days and when he was doing some play-by-play for the Pawtucket Red Sox. And oh, what a long way he's come. He's got his foot in everything for ESPN, college basketball, baseball. He does golf. You name it, he does it. He's got his foot in everything, but we're going to talk some San Francisco Giants and Major League Baseball. I might hit him on a couple of things as well, but he'll be joining us in just a few moments. But without further ado, let's welcome in the co-host of the Going Old School podcast, Mr. John Crow. John, how are you today?
I'm good. Just waiting for the next round of thunderstorms to roll into southern New England and, you know, see if we all survive that on this wonderful Wednesday.
Oh, I hear your frustration, man. It's freaking July. And we were talking before the show that it might as well be, I'm either in Seattle in a bad dream or with the heat and the humidity, and I'm waiting for like a 12-foot anaconda to come swimming down my driveway, the tropical heat. Welcome to the Amazon rainforest. How can I help you?
It's kind of nuts. My daughter plays basketball, and the game's usually at 6 o'clock and a couple times a week, and it seems like every single day that we have games scheduled, it's been a weather alert. And it's just been nuts. Can we at least get a couple of days of decent weather strung back to back?
Yeah, exactly. Now, does this mean it's going to be a blistering hot fall? Who knows? But you're right, it's July. I mean, you really can't plan anything outdoors, especially if it's over a long period of time, say 6-7 hours in a park. You've got to prepare for rain at some point, shape or form. So you got to pack your cases, pack your trunk, not only with the beach stuff, but with a couple umbrellas, maybe some sunglasses, maybe a heat shield, maybe a suit of armor for any sort of hail falling out of the sky. Who the hell knows, but it's crazy. And that's John Crow. So we're listening to the You're Going Old School show with Chips and Crow in the classroom, and we'll be joined by David Fleming in just a couple of minutes. But Boston Red Sox now have a slim one-half game lead over the Rays. And, JC, as you were pointing out, yet another win by those pesky, stinking Rays.
Damn Rays. You know, I knew when you see the Orioles on the schedule, your mindset is, okay, Rays are going to sweep. But then you get a little gift on Monday because the Orioles beat them. Yesterday, the Rays come back. And then you see early today, the Orioles have a lead 4-3 in the top of the ninth. You're like, all right, maybe we'll get another gift here, possibly. But no, here comes Meadows with a walk-off hit, and the Rays win 5-4. And as you aptly said, the Red Sox now must beat the Jays, or they will have company tonight atop the American League East. And, hey, buckle up, because this is how it's going to be the rest of the way, because the Rays are good. They're for real. They'll probably make a move at the deadline that'll be like, huh, who is that person? But it will work out for them because that's what they do. So it's incumbent upon the Red Sox to do the same and continue on. They had the rain out last night in Buffalo against the Jays. See if they can get back playing tonight. And then, of course, the Yankees come to town four. And you can bet a little payback, I'm sure, will be in mind for the hometown team come tomorrow night.
Absolutely, and you talk about, you know, the 2-2 on the 17-game stretch are very important. Maybe they will determine what they do, certainly at the All-Star break, I mean, certainly at the trade deadline, but may determine how they perform the rest of the year. I think they're going to be fine. I said for several weeks now that this team is a playoff contender. They're a division contender, and they can compete for American League pennant. Having said that, he's got a 7-game lead over Toronto. It's a big game tonight. Obviously, they're all big, but that 2-game swing, John, they lose tonight 6 games as opposed to winning an 8. And 8 games is that number where you start getting close to 10. 6 is closer to 5 to me. You expect the 8 games, you start getting close to that double-digit lead. And against Toronto, a team that is really looked at, maybe more so than the Yankees, to make a run versus Tampa and Boston.
Yeah, and it just goes to what the Red Sox have been doing since they left Oakland. You know, they motored into Anaheim. They won game one, lost the final two. Came back home against Philadelphia, won the first one, lost the next two. Went into New York, won the first one, lost the next two. Well, they won Monday night in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. They got rained out last night, but, you know, time for them to step up and, you know, kind of buck this trend that they've been getting themselves into, especially when you have the Yankees coming to town for four big ones this weekend. It's just, you know, getting out of that little rut they have, and, you know, it's coming upon them to have some urgency, much like they did on Monday night, eight runs in the first, you know, first inning against Stripling. So, you know, let's see if they can do that once again tonight, because they're going to need it. They, you know, they can't all be great, all 162. You're going to have those weeks. I mean, you look at the Red Sox, 4-6 in the last 10. The Jays and the Rays and the Yankees both 7-3. That's why it's kind of bunched up a little bit here. You know, even the Blue Jays, 5-5. So they've at least, you know, stolen a game away from them. So it's just one of those key points that we have in the season where it's like, all right, let's see how they deal with adversity tonight. It's another one of those blips. And, you know, we can talk about Dave Fleming, you know, one of those for the Giants tonight. The Giants blew, you know, saw the Dodgers come back behind five runs last night. Will Smith with a walk-off three-run home run. You know, Giants have a spot like that tonight to see how they handle that adversity.
Impeccable timing. Call it a great segue. You mentioned Dave Fleming, and he's on the line with us. Let's welcome in the radio voice of the San Francisco Giants amongst a plethora of other things. Old friend David Fleming is here from the left coast. David, Johnny here and John Coe here in the Rhode Island area. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you to both of you. Nice to hear your voices.
Ditto, David, and congratulations to what you do. And we'll get into the series with the Dodgers and the Giants now, but I want to go back to expectations and not a lot of fanfare coming out of spring training with the Giants. You see the team up close we can in this day and age we live in. What were your expectations coming into the season, David, and have they exceeded it, and how do you see it progressing? Is this sustainable as opposed to maybe overachieving, if you will?
Yeah, okay, I'll take them one at a time. I thought they were going to be a good team, much better than, say, the predictions thought before the season. I mean, the Giants' over-under win total was like 75, and I just couldn't believe it was that low. The Giants were a good team last year, finished, you know, lost the final game of the year trying to finish 500, but even in a shortened season, they'd clearly taken a huge step forward. We went to spring training, and I watched the games in Arizona and thought, man, they have too many good players. They don't have enough room for all the players that they have. I was skeptical about the pitching. I just didn't know if they had enough starting pitching, and that has come through plus. I mean, they've had really good starting pitching. But I figured they were going to be a competitive team. I didn't know they were going to be in first place at the end of July. So I guess they've overachieved my expectations a little bit. But I also think that to the second part of your question, it's not been a fluke. I mean, the run differential says it's not been a fluke. A lot of the underlying metrics, how hard you hit the ball, how hard your pitchers, you know, the hard contact that your pitchers give up or don't give up, throwing strikes, taking walks, all the stuff that sort of leads to success points to this being one of the very best teams in the game. So, you know, I think it's sustainable whether they keep up 105 win pace. I don't know about that, but the Giants are in position to finish the year very strong.
Dave, as someone here on the East Coast, you know, we don't get to see a ton of the West Coast games. What we get as much as, you know, humanly possible, just because you've got such great, the Giants, the Dodgers, the Padres. As someone who sees it day in and day out, how much fun is it to see baseball at that level right now?
Yeah, it's really fun. It's been, I mean, it is where the best ball is being played at the moment. And it's funny how that's happened. You've got three franchises that have really done it in a different way, but all three very talented. And it's turned into the kind of thing where the fan bases, I mean, Giants fans, Padres fans, Dodgers fans are just so engaged with the sport. You know, baseball is very localized, and you guys know it up there. When the Sox are good, when the Yankees are good, there's nothing like it. You know, there's nothing like those head-to-head games. Or if there's another team in the East, you throw in the mix that's having a particularly good year. And that's what we got going on right now, where the head-to-head matchups between these three teams are just the most entertaining thing right now that baseball has to offer. And so it's super fun. You combine that with Shohei Ohtani and what he's doing down in Anaheim, even though the Angels aren't as good of a team overall. It is definitely a year where West Coast baseball is front and center.
Dave Fleming joined us, radio voice of the San Francisco Giants, here on the Going Old School podcast with John Curl and John Aaron. David, you know, Gabe Kapler did some nice things in Philly. I think he was a victim of two bad Septembers, which may have kept him out of a playoff a few years back. Comes to the Giants. What have you seen from him, and how is the team responding to him? And just based on what you've seen, what effect does he have on a team like the Giants?
Well, I think he's done an excellent job. He's been a little different, I think. I mean, you know, I think this is an example of it's almost like a cliche, but I think in a lot of cases it's really true, where you learn from the mistakes that you make in your first go-round. And I think Gabe, you know, you're right, September didn't go well for him in Philadelphia. His first week didn't go well in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And he, in some ways, he never recovered from that first week, where his very first game, Aaron Nola was pitching great, and he took him out, and bullpen blew the lead. And it was like, man, we're just sticking to this rigid plan. And everybody thought he was just an automaton and a manager who was just going to listen to the front office and manage by the book and had no feel for the game. And all that stuff turned out to be very unfair. I mean, he's been a much more flexible with his willingness to let starting pitchers go deep into games. I think he's changed his philosophy about that. He's really run a fantastic platoon system this year, where the Giants are using their bench way more, not just, you know, a little bit more. They're using their bench way more than anybody else in the big leagues, very aggressively chasing good matchups even early in games. Takes some guts to do it, and he's pulled it off. It's been a huge part of the Giants' success. So I feel good for him because he is a good man. He cares deeply about doing a good job. He cares about his players. And so I'm happy that he's had this kind of success. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. He is the manager of the year in the National League. I don't think anybody else is close.
Dave, we all know it all begins and ends with starting pitching, and the Giants have it this year. And talk to me about the staff and also the importance of Buster Posey behind the plate.
Yeah, I mean, two things. I think, you know, the pitching part of it, the Giants right now have a team in place, and it's really spearheaded by a guy that you all know very well, Brian Bannister, whom, you know, Farhan Zaidi hired to come to the Giants and be the director of pitching, just basically oversee the pitching in the organization from the top all the way down to the bottom. And between Brian and the staff, the Giants have an arrogance right now, very well earned. And I say arrogance, they're not arrogant about it. They have a confidence about their ability to take not any pitcher, but a pitcher who has some talent, who is struggling, and take that pitcher and help him maximize his ability and get better bottom line results out of his ability. And so the Giants have had this incredible run here for 2 years now of between Drew Smyly last year, who turned himself into an ace-like pitcher, and Kevin Gausman, which has carried into this year. And now Anthony DeSclafani's pitched like an all-star. He's got 10 wins. Alex Woods pitched extremely well for the Giants. Not that this is his first success of his career, but, you know, he's having a great year. So it's a combination of the Giants have found these talented guys who, for whatever reason, have not performed, and then helping them maximize their ability. And it's a great formula because it means, I mean, if you can keep doing it, I'm not saying it's easy to keep doing, but if you can keep doing it, then you don't have to go out and spend $200 million on an ace starter. You can try to not just develop in the minor leagues, but develop some talent at the big league level by helping struggling pitchers get better. That's what they've done really well.
Dave Fleming joins us. David, you talk about, you know, power up the middle and Brandon Crawford. I know he's a little dinged up. And Wilmer Flores, 28 homers between them. How important is that? And what's the latest you've heard on Brandon Crawford? Because he's been the leader in basically every offensive statistical category as we speak.
Yeah, he's having a great year. Brandon's been a great player, and he's, you know, probably an example of, you know, East Coast baseball fans just don't know enough about Brandon, who's been a starting player for a decade and has been one of the best overall players really in the National League over that time, mostly based on his defense. He's had a couple good offensive years. He's had a Silver Slugger year, but he's been just an amazingly, consistently great defensive shortstop. And now he's put in a ton of work late in his career to change his swing, change his approach, tap into more power, hit the ball hard, but instead of hitting it hard on the ground or slapping it to left field, hitting the ball hard with power. He's just turned into a different player. I mean, Brandon Crawford is one of the best players of this generation, and I hope that this year is starting to give him some credit for that. He's going to be out for 10 days, hopefully not more than that. He's got a very mild oblique injury. The Giants have lost just about as many days to injury as any team in the major leagues. So when you consider they have the best record of any team in the big leagues, and they've had more injuries than almost anybody, you know, right now they have Evan Longoria on the injured list, and he's been out for 2 months. Brandon Belt's on the injured list. He's been out for a month. Brandon Crawford's on the injured list. Tommy La Stella was their big pickup in the offseason on the offensive side, expected to be their leadoff hitter against right-handed pitching. He's been out almost the entire year. I mean, that's four out of the eight guys right now that were supposed to be in the everyday lineup. Buster Posey just came back from an injury. He was out for a couple weeks. They have leaned into depth big time to survive all that, and they're still waiting for some of those players to get back.
Dave, having done games here in New England, Red Sox organization, you know how important the name Yastrzemski is here on the East Coast and in New England. Talk to me about Mike Yastrzemski, his evolution.
Yeah, I mean, you guys saw him 2 years ago when he came to Fenway in that remarkable week there and the home run he hit and having Granddad there to be with him. His success has just continued. Last year, I feel bad because, you know, last year we didn't have an all-star game. He was one of the best players in the National League last year. He got MVP votes. He easily would have made an all-star team. He's having a little less success this year, still very good. He's one of the only – he, Crawford, and Posey, really, I guess Longoria and Belt when they're healthy, but they just haven't been, are kind of the everyday guys on this team. Yastrzemski's playing just about every day. The rest of the Giants are on much more of a platoon part-time schedule when everybody's healthy. And he's just a really, really well-rounded player. Yastrzemski's an excellent defensive right fielder. In some ways, I think it's cool because, you know, Red Sox fans got to watch Yaz for all those years play the monster in left at Fenway and, you know, became expert at it. Maybe nobody ever did it better. And, you know, very tricky outfield to play. Well, in San Francisco, right field is kind of the equivalent. A high wall, brick, pad, archways, weird caroms, tons of ground to cover, and Yastrzemski's kind of become the expert in handling right field. He hits for power. He takes a walk. He runs the bases well. He's just a really good all-around player. And there isn't a day that goes by where I don't think it's absolutely astonishing that the Orioles never even gave him a day in the big leagues. Like, how is it that the Giants identified him as somebody who could be a good player, and the Orioles, who have been the worst organization in the game, wins and losses-wise for the last few years, couldn't give this guy some at-bats? I just am astonished by that almost every single day. He wasn't worthy of a 40-man spot for them, and he's turned into a star player for the Giants.
San Francisco Giants radio voice David Fleming joining us here on our podcast, our old school podcast. John Crow and Johnny Sunship's here as well. David, tough loss last night, another walk-off loss. Numbers, 8 walk-off losses this season for the Giants. What does that do to the mentality of a relief corps, a bullpen, a closer, if you will, when you know that this game is close and it's weighing on you? Is that in the back of these guys' minds at times? Is it human nature to do that, or is this just a character builder for this team?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're 5-2. We'll see what happens today. But the game after those other walk-off losses, they're 5-2 this year. So there hasn't been any hangover effect that I can detect from the previous ones. The bullpen's been really, really good for the Giants. Most of those came early in the year when it wasn't very good. But the bullpen's gotten a lot better as the season has gone on. In fact, it's been spectacular here lately until last night. I mean, the reality is that it's just going to happen. You know, we tolerate hitters going through a slump where you have a week where J.D. Martinez or, you know, the best hitters in the game just are off. And starting pitchers, same way. You know, a starter, even Jacob deGrom, every once in a while gives up some runs. It's just the nature of the game. And somehow with relievers, we don't have that same tolerance for failure because, you know, the failures stand out so much more than the successes. So in a lot of ways, that's unfair. I expect the Giants bullpen will be fine. But one thing, you know, they've got this guy, Tyler Rogers, who I don't know if your listeners really know about, but he throws the slowest fastball in the game. He gets fewer swings and misses than almost anybody in the game. And yet he's been a super valuable reliever. And last night he was pitching the ninth inning. He's just had a great year. His twin for the Twins, Taylor Rogers, is an all-star and is a totally different pitcher. Tyler's a right-handed submariner. Taylor's a left-handed flamethrower. They're literally opposite twins, where, like, one has a freckle on one side of his face and the other has a freckle on the other side of his face, and they're that way as baseball players, completely opposite. And Tyler's just been great for the Giants. He's totally funky and unique. But this is the third blow-up he's had at Dodger Stadium recently. He is having success everywhere else except for Dodger Stadium, which, you know, okay, they don't play that many games there, but it is the Giants' main rival. And so at some point, Tyler's going to have to get that one figured out.
Dave, I want to go big picture with you for a moment. And you talked about Ohtani, you know, with the Angels out on the West Coast. And where do you kind of line in with the Ohtani versus Guerrero MVP kind of picture? And I know it's still July, so tons of baseball still left to be played. But where do you kind of sit in on that debate right now?
Well, I think Ohtani gets the tiebreaker just because he has – done both. And so as great as Vlad has been, I think Ohtani's doing something that quite literally has never been done before. You know, you look back at Babe Ruth's career, and the Babe, when he was still in Boston, had a year, maybe you could stretch it to two, where he was kind of doing both at the same time, but never to the degree that Ohtani is doing it this year. I mean, I think it's very fair to say that there has never been a season like this in the history of the game. So I defer to that. I defer to we've been playing this game for 150 years, and when somebody's doing something that has never been done before, that deserves the ultimate recognition. So we'll see if he keeps it up. I mean, it's no guarantee. It's certainly difficult what he's trying to pull off. But I favor Ohtani just because of the astonishingly historical nature of what he's doing. No takeaway from Vlad Jr., who's been awesome, but Ohtani's a different beast.
David Fleming joining us, radio voice for the San Francisco Giants. David, you know, I'm looking at the standings in the NL West, which is what you're engulfed in, and there are three solid teams. And it's a shame to think, and this has been eating on me because I never liked it from the start, the wild card one-game winner-take-all playoff after a long 162-game season. I never liked it from the beginning. I'm not going to like it now because you have three teams, one of which you cover, and two of those teams are going to come down to a one-game win or go home. And to me, that it's almost like it's just not fair. Your thoughts on that one-game single elimination wildcard game in Major League Baseball?
Well, I see it both ways. I mean, at last year, I thought it did work better when we had the one-year best-of-three wildcard round. The problem with that was that the division winners were thrust into that round. So really, there was almost no – and look, last year was a different season. I think baseball pulled it off nicely considering all the challenges, but there was no real reward for actually winning the division last season. There was some reward. I mean, just to take the Dodgers as an example, they played easily the weakest playoff team last year in the first round and swept the Brewers in two games. So, you know, they got a good draw in that first best of three, but it's still a best of three that you have to play in. So, you know, I would prefer a best of three wild card round, but I do love the drama of you got to win, and the Giants have played in two of them over their history now, and, you know, they are incredibly dramatic games, super fun games to be a part of, great baseball theater. And I'm in favor of, you know, this is a little bit of an aberration. It's happened many times over the years in the American League, where the American League East has been so much tougher than the other divisions. And so you kind of get a sense of unfairness with, wait a minute, we battled in this division. Now we got to play the wild card game. What about those guys from the Central? That's kind of what's going on in the National League West right now. But I am very much in favor of giving a reward over the long season to a division winner. You win your division, and you should get rewarded by that. So this season, you know, the stakes are extraordinarily high in the National League West because of how good all three of those teams are. But I do believe that the division winner should get an advantage, should get a reward, and that's definitely going to happen in this case.
All right, Dave, we'll put you in Rob Manfred's chair. And, you know, he's faced a lot of criticism, you know, through COVID, dealing with that. And, hey, I give any sport, you know, kudos for getting through as much as they have been in the last year and a half. But obviously Manfred has criticism with dealing with, you know, pitchers, foreign substances, the time of game, slowness of game, not enough action. And we got the Epps Jr. now as co-counsels. You know, if you're Rob Manfred, what do you do to inject something to get back into, you know, either getting the youth back into the game or getting more marketing, or where do you go to put some oomph back into the sport?
Well, you know, I do think Rob and everybody deserves credit for COVID. I mean, baseball has done a good job with all that. Not that there haven't been some trip-ups, but baseball's done a good job in getting through this. And we're still not all the way through it, but baseball deserves some credit for that. There's lots of great about the game right now. Look, I mean, it's a complicated question. I think this sticky substance thing has been instructive to me, though, because, you know, we've spent half of this year talking about, oh my gosh, do we need to move the mound back or lower the mound, or does the baseball need to do this or that? And here we are in these last few weeks where baseball's cracked down on something that none of us had an idea of how big of an impact it was having on the game being played. And since that crackdown has happened, here comes offense back at a really good, healthy level. You know, the balance of the game has been restored to some degree. I agree with those. I mean, look, I don't think it's as existential of a problem as some people seem to think, but I do agree that strikeouts and a ton of strikeouts are not good for the game. And so some way to kind of get that balance back is ideal. That's much easier said than done. The one thing that I would do if I were the commissioner that I would focus on is trying to get these games a little speedier with pace. And I do think that in the minor leagues, there has been an extraordinary amount of evidence that says that pitch clocks and actual enforcement of pitch clocks makes the game move along. And so strikeouts, no strikeouts, home runs, no home runs, pitching changes and, you know, three batter minimums. I think people today just want a product that's a little more compact and moves along at a better pace. And fans in the ballparks don't really care. You're out for a night at the ballpark, game goes a little long, heck, chance to have another beer or another ice cream or whatever, and you're there outdoors, it's the summertime, great. But for your growing the game audience at home watching on TV, the games are too long. They are. And in, you know, today's world of lots of choices, it's hard to compete against choices that are a little more streamlined. And so I do think that would be my focus. And I still believe that the solution is pretty darn simple. We just We never have gotten to a point where the players and the front office and the league office have gotten together to say, let's actually do this. There's tons of resistance from the players' side. And I think if you could just convince the players to get on board with that, there could be lots of good consequences. And, you know, I think there's one other problem, and that is starting pitching to me drives so much of the success of the game in terms of building up anticipation for an individual matchup. So anything we can do to encourage traditional starting pitching and starters hanging around games and being the center of attention in games is ultimately good for the sport.
David, one more question on rules in baseball. The extra inning runner on second base rule, are you for that? I think it's kind of exciting, whether it transpires into a postseason, we don't even want to go there. But I think that's kind of exciting. And the shift, a lot of debate about the shift. Should it be banned? Should it not? Your opinion on both of those, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I like the extra inning rule, actually. I mean, I think baseball is kind of the only sport where when the game goes to, quote, overtime, fans get up and leave. Every other sport, it's like, wow, overtime, that's great. And in baseball over the years, you know, especially with game time so much longer now, I mean, it's 7 o'clock weeknight game. You go to extra innings, it's 10:15, 10:30, and you don't know when the game's going to end. And people just say, I can't do it anymore. If the games were more streamlined, then I don't think we'd have this issue, but they're not. So until we solve that problem, I like the extra inning rule as it is, because I do believe it accomplishes the number one thing, which is we don't want the 18-inning marathon games where bullpens are being torched and rosters are being affected for a week after that game. It avoids that. And there is something, even if fans gripe about it a little bit, they watch and they, you know, okay, this game's going to go to the 10th. We know the extra runner's coming, and you stick around and you figure you're going to see some action right away. And I think that's good. The tie games that go to extra innings, those should be your most exciting games, not the ones where people turn the TV off or leave the ballpark. So for that reason, I kind of like the, I like that extra inning rule. What was the second one you asked me about, Johnny?
That should the shift be eliminated, or in your opinion, what do you think of the shift in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I never thought so, but I actually think that part of the appeal of the game in some way, I would like to experiment with it. And I think baseball's doing a really good job of experimenting with some of these rules in the minor leagues. Let's just see what happens when we do. Because I do think part of the appeal of the sport of baseball is the geometry of it and how in your mind you can kind of close your eyes and see the diamond and see where everybody kind of is supposed to be. And that has disappeared to a large degree. And I think it does hurt the game aesthetically a little bit. Does it hurt the game strategically that much? Probably not a huge impact to it. But, you know, sometimes we don't pay enough attention to what's fun, enjoyable, aesthetically pleasing, as opposed to, you know, the issues that the players and managers like to bring up. Sometimes we skew a little bit too far in their direction, as opposed to this is supposed to be an entertainment product that's fun. And I do think seeing the shortstop at shortstop, you know, Buster Posey told me something. I'd never really considered it, but we were talking about this very issue in spring training, and he said, you know, I want to see Brandon Crawford make gold glove plays ranging to the hole, ranging up the middle. I want to see him. What would Ozzie Smith be in the era of shifts? Would Ozzie be all alone over there? Would the ball be being hit to him? Would we see those highlight plays that got him to the Hall of Fame? I mean, those are some of the most fun plays to watch in baseball, and sometimes the shift takes away players' ability to show off their skills. And I thought that was a really good point. Like, there's not that much more that's more fun in the sport of baseball than, say, a great shortstop making a great play, and the shift sometimes eliminates that possibility. That's not good for the game.
It's a great point, Dave. My last question, and it goes outside of baseball. You know, you do a lot of stuff with college football and college basketball, and I had to get your reaction to the report out of the Houston Chronicle today that Oklahoma and Texas reaching out to the SEC possibly joining them, and that an announcement could come in a couple of weeks. What's your take?
Well, obviously that would be gigantic news. And, you know, ultimately I think it's not great news. I think college sports, and we know that in a lot of ways college sports are sort of on the precipice anyway, but college sports have lost something recently in the lack of, to me, college sports, the regionalization is a charm, is a positive as opposed to a negative. And we've lost a little bit of that in college sports, and we're losing more of it. And that would be another gigantic step towards basically kind of a super league of colleges. And that's probably kind of where we're headed is, you know, where you got maybe it might take 20 years to get there, but you have 25 programs around the country that are basically competing in football, at least, and everybody else is kind of left on the outside. You know, I went to Stanford, and I saw that news today, and in the back of my mind, I thought, well, that's another step in the direction of Stanford not playing football ultimately, because I think there are a lot of schools out there that just aren't interested in becoming semi-professional institutions, and that's exactly what's happening. These schools are chasing short-term cash, and it's a lot of cash. So, there is a motivation to do it. But at the great detriment of the overall health of the sport and the idea of college athletics, and I'm glad players are going to be able to some of those rules are being loosened where players can take advantage of their fame and their athletic prowess at the college level. But I still love college sports because of the institutions. And the fact that they are kids and we're on college campuses, that's a huge part of the appeal to me. If it becomes semi-pro football, that doesn't have as much appeal to me. And I think we're veering in a direction where some people are losing sight of what has made college football so popular for many, many years. And I worry that ultimately these are going to be looked back on as steps in a very wrong direction for college sports. But I do understand, it did not surprise me when I saw that, because I think ultimately there's a chance that Ohio State and Michigan and Wisconsin and Texas and Oklahoma and Alabama and Texas A&M and Florida and LSU, that's your college football. It's 20 programs all playing in one super conference, playing for their own championship, and that's going to be the sport. I think that's a possibility.
David, final question for me, and we thank you for the time. Listen, I'm a big fan of John Miller's, and you grew up listening to him while you were younger. What's it been like being his broadcast partner?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny. When I first showed up, I was working with the guy that I listened to as a kid. And so it was a little, not intimidating, but I didn't know what to expect. Mostly what I expected is, God, I'm going to sound like an idiot next to him. This is a terrible thing for me. Because the contrast is not going to be good in my favor. And the reality was exactly the opposite. The reality was that his outstanding broadcasting, his overall excellence, made me better in a hurry. And just being next to him made me sound better instantly. And it's a great lesson for all young people, because I was very young when I first got the Giants job. And I tell kids this, be around as many great people as you possibly can, people who do what they do at an extremely high level. And don't worry about the comparison or looking bad in contrast. Just try to be around as many outstanding people as you can, and it just makes you better. And it certainly made me better being around him. He's a wonderful broadcast partner with a great sense of humor. In a lot of ways, I think people know him for his great work on Sunday Night Baseball, which was great. He's one of the great network mm-hmm. baseball announcers of all time. But he's a better local announcer than he is a network announcer. His local calls have so much more personality and humor and fun, and John on the radio is just a joy. So it's amazing to think that we've been together for 19 seasons now. We've done thousands and thousands of games together. I think in his long, distinguished career, he's done more games with me than with anybody else in his career, and that makes me pretty proud.
David, can't thank you enough for the time. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. I'm making time for us. Listen, all the best to you and yours. Have a great call tonight. Take care. Be well. And hopefully we can talk down the road, sir.
Yeah, nice to talk baseball with both of you. And I can be a homer here for a few seconds. Let's go Giants. Come on.
Yeah, they have. You got it. Thanks, David.
Giants-Red Sox World Series. Come on. That sounds pretty good to me.
I like it.
Sounds good, David. Thanks, buddy.
Right, thanks.
Thanks, David.
And that's David Fleming, radio voice of the Giants, and as Crow was alluding to, just he has his foot in everything. And, man, talk about well-rounded. And, boy, he should be in the McCoy Broadcaster Hall of Fame or the Paw Sox Hall of Fame because he's really done well for himself. And kudos to him. He had that work ethic, John. You remember back at the score when he was doing stuff for the Paw Sox, him and Fried with that work ethic there during those days. But it's a pleasure to join to have David Fleming joining us and talking some West Coast baseball, and that is the epicenter of all of what's of the strength in Major League Baseball, John, with the Giants, the Dodgers, the Padres, and oh, by the way, you have an Anaheim Angel team that is getting Mike Trout back and a couple years away from maybe a good GM getting him making a couple moves where you're talking about the balance of power in baseball is solely in the state of California.
Yeah, it's a good thing to see. And just an aside on Dave, you know, we were just blessed by the announcers that, you know, we got to work with Don Arcillo, Dave Fleming, Andy Fried. I mean, amazing, off the charts to what they're doing now up in the big leagues. I mean, just amazing, like you said, talent, but also the work ethic. They put it
right
in every single day to what they got done. And, you know, my wife, this is how good Dave Fleming is. When he's on, we stop and we enjoy. So
yeah.
You know, he's just got that knack of welcoming you into a ball game and say, hey, let's have a conversation. And that's all you can ask for as a baseball
right
fan. And that does carry over when he does his, you know, gig at ESPN college football and basketball. And
mm-hmm.
You know, he's dead on with where that's going. Unfortunately, because that's just another business waiting to consolidate.
No question. And this is John Crow, Johnny. Go ahead, John. Finish your thought, too.
As far as the, you know, the West Coast, I mean, hey, they've proven they've got the talent. Can they surround it front office to get it done and continue like the Dodgers have done consistently over the last 8 years?
Yeah, no question about it, but it's interesting, too, and you think about baseball and so forth. But, yeah, you talk about the days, and you talk about, you know, Dave, and we know him because we listen to him. We produce his games here at the score, so we know what he's like and how that voice on radio can really welcome you into a broadcast. His brother, Will, up in Boston, is the same way. They sound the same.
Yeah.
If you listen to Dave, listen to Will, it's hard to tell them apart. And Will Fleming just has that, just you sit there and you kind of like, put your head on your hands and almost like kind of lull you to sleep with this broadcast. And that's a good thing. I mean, in a bad way, just make you feel comfortable and welcome. And his brother has that. And Dave sure does. And him and John Miller are a great pair there. And that's right. That's one quality that is really necessary to be on radio, especially if you're broadcasting in like baseball, where you have a lot of time to fill.
Yeah. And you know, they are that welcoming voice that brings you in. Because let's be honest, you know, this generation, their attention span is just not there. So you got to
mm-hmm.
get them involved, whether it be with social media, with entertaining stories, with, you know, bringing that, you know, color analyst, giving them that personality so that you can have that running three-hour conversation. I mean, that's where it's at, you know, no matter what sport you're doing, because there's no guarantee when you throw the first pitch, drop the first puck, put up the first basket,
mm-hmm.
or the first pass, whether you're going to have a good game or a bad game. But what you can control is if it's a good broadcast or not, and that begins with the conversation. And, you know, they're just very good at it.
Yeah, and you can argue, make the argument, too, that, you know, if you're not watching TV, you can always have access to what's going on in terrestrial radio through apps, through whatever. So that's more, that can be arguably more part of your life to the point where you can be engaged in a radio announcer could have that much more of a pull because you're moving around doing other things. You're going shopping, this and that. You've got the earphone in, and you're listening to the games they speak. So there's more of a culpability on them to keep the interest by what they do and how they come across.
Yeah, and I'll take it the other way. You know, I refuse to listen to ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, the television broadcast. I'll put the television on. I'll watch the game, but I refuse to listen to Alex Rodriguez give 1 ounce of analysis on anything because it's just off. I'll listen to ESPN Radio and sync it up, or I'll listen to something else while I watch the game. I mean, it just
throws
you that. An analyst can rub you the wrong way, or a play-by-play guy can rub you the wrong way just as easily to make you not want to be involved in that conversation. And, you know, we're just blessed that, you know, we go all the way back to, you know, the days of Vin Scully. Did it by himself for so many years. You know, God bless him that he has the talent to do that. But it's amazing because in this day and age, you have broadcasters and, you know, media companies making the decision that, well, they don't have to be on site anymore. We can save some dollars here. We don't have to have as many people doing the games, and we can just, you know, simulcast this, that, and the other thing. And it's, you're missing the point. These people are part of our lives with these teams. And when you get good ones, keep them because they make an absolute difference.
There's no question. More so now than ever. So it's really important. People say I don't tune into a sport for a broadcast, you know, I won't watch a game just for the broadcaster. You give me Gus Johnson on a sideline on a football or a college basketball game. I don't care I don't care if it's a Division 5 game. I am tuning in to listen to Gus Johnson broadcast a high school game because he's good at what he does and he'll make it exciting. Doc Emmerich in hockey made a 1-0 zone defense battle with 8 shots on net after 2.5 periods sound like a Stanley Cup final. It just, I tune in for guys like that, and I think radio is the same way. And we just spoke to one Dave Fleming, and hey, it's just great. And I'm glad we got to talk a little baseball, and especially West Coast baseball, because it's must see TV when the Giants, Padres, and Dodgers are going at it. I lived out in L.A., John, and the venom between the Dodger fans and the Giant fans has been going on for a long time. Now you throw a little team with a little swag, be the San Diego Padres, get a little chip on their shoulder, a little new kid on the block, little stutter step by Tatis Jr. going around third base. It throws a whole different element in each sport, and we talked about it before, that needs this sort of venom, that needs this publicity. We talked about before how they're good for the game. I love Tatis, I love Ohtani, and it's good when we get these players and teams, albeit out there, because people will gravitate out west to watch these players play, even if it's here come playoff time. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, Tatis had another bomb today, and Ohtani hit one today. Padres get another win in the first game of a double dip against the Braves. And, you know, it's good stuff being put forth, no matter, you know, what the negatives are with the game. But if you can become invested in the storylines, I mean, they're out there. And, you know, I just hope it continues as, you know, we get towards, you know, meaningful games in August, September, and, of course, October.
No question. And a meaningful game tonight, weather permitting, so to speak. And if I didn't have enough of him already, he's going to call in and bother our show. Joe, you got to call in again. I just spoke with you for an hour and a half not too long ago. What do you want now? I'm only kidding, Joe. How you doing, Matt?
Good night, John. How you doing? JC, how we doing?
I'm good, Joe. How's your Wednesday?
It was good. Good. Had a good show, and you guys sounded excellent. Love listening to Dave.
Yeah, Dave was good. And I want to get John's comment on the NBA Finals. You and I talked about, Joe. So, but I want to ask you a question, Joe. We were talking about announcers and radio announcers and TV broadcasts and what they mean. Are they, you know, we've had some good ones here in Boston. But what does it mean to you? I mean, as far as announcers, do you tune into someone like? Do you tune into a John Sterling for the Yankees? I love Don Arcillo on TV. I think he's one of the best TV guys in the business. Are there certain broadcasters that kind of you'll perk up even in the football world? Because I mentioned Gus Johnson as one.
Well, I was old school, so Fred Cusick and you know the old Bruins crew on 38 freaking to me loved listening to them. I like, believe it or not, I used to like listening to Ken Harrelson when he was with the Sox.
You can put it on the board, yes.
Hey, look, it's just like guys I grew up with, and it's like the old school guys, and I agree with you with Doc Emmerich. He could make a freaking game that totally sucked, the New Jersey Devils against the freaking New York Islanders of, let's keep it in the neutral zone. You could make that game sound like it's a freaking blaze of glory.
JC, we had a great one here in Boston. I don't know if you remember the day. You must have. Ken Coleman came into the studio one day, and we just sat around and listened to stories. Remember that day?
I do. And, you know, and, hey, I'm a kid that grew up on Bob Wilson, you know, growing up on Bruins Radio every Thursday night. I had to get my music lesson playing the accordion. My appointment was at 7 o'clock. So as I waited for my teacher to get there, and then after on their way home in the car, I'm listening to Bob Wilson tell me all about the Bruins. And he, like Ken Coleman, Ned Martin, those guys brought me into the sport. And look, 50 years later, I'm still here.
There you go, baby. And you know what's funny about Coleman? I didn't know it till that day, that he broadcast every single one of Jim Brown's professional football games.
Yeah. Speaking of football, God rest his soul, Gil Santos. I love him.
Yes.
Loved him.
Loved him, too. Anyway, okay. I got to get your thoughts on Giannis and the Bucks. I loved it. I loved the way they came. I don't think it was about the Suns winning the series. I think it was about the Bucks seizing the moment. Giannis, talk about him real close to not even playing at all, what he did physically, and to overcome all that mental stuff. He made some free throws in yesterday's game, scored 50 points, really kind of put himself, took another step on that upper echelon, and I liked what he said after. Where do you see Giannis now going moving forward, and can he turn this Milwaukee Buck team into a destination for maybe, say, a Damian Lillard in the future? But what your thoughts on the series and what that means? I think it's good for basketball.
Yeah, it's great for basketball, and more importantly, it's awesome for Giannis and for the Milwaukee Bucks because it changes the entire story of what he is and where that franchise is, because it takes all of the onus off. They won their championship. He stayed there, signed the extension, didn't have to go someplace else, form that super team someplace else. And I love the shots he was throwing at LeBron James and Kevin Durant after the game last night. I got it done. You know, that's great for the sport. And you talk about a guy who had a knee injury, you know, 3 weeks ago. We all thought, you know, torn ACL, whatever, you know, career-ending injury possibly. You know, it said, no, I want to play. And it was a guy who couldn't hit a three-pointer, couldn't hit free throws. But you know what? He said, guys, just like Cedric Maxwell did in the 80s for the Celtics in the finals, get on my back, let's go.
Yep.
And he completely changes how you look at him.
Yep. And I'm not so sure what was more impressive, the fact that he poured in 50 or the fact that he had to pull up in that press conference before when he was talking about going to another team. He was ready to go off the rails, but he pulled himself in with all the emotion, with the trophies in hand, gathered his thoughts and said, I don't have to go to a team. I don't need to make a super team. I loved it. I thought that was a great exercise in self-control because he had the world at his feet, so to speak, vocally, and he could have said it and he could have gotten away with it, but he held back, and I think that was so cool, and I respected him a lot because he had every reason in the world to say, see what I did? I don't have to do that, and he was ready to go off, but it was a great performance by him. I loved it.
Yeah, it speaks volumes to how he – his character and what he is as a person. I mean, obviously he's a phenomenal basketball player, you know, but he changed his game a little bit because he took what the negatives were and made them into positives for his team. And, you know, obviously he couldn't get it done without Chris Middleton being the closer last couple of games. I mean, P.J. Tucker with his defense, you know, Bobby Portis in the middle there getting the work on the boards, you know, Jrue Holiday. I mean, that's why they brought those guys in. And sure, were they a little bit lucky because the Nets, you know, didn't have health Sure. But you know what? This is what happened. Take advantage of it. Win yourself a championship. And that's exactly what they did.
And Joe and I were speaking a little earlier about this, and I was saying, okay, Giannis, you know, some players work on things. I don't think Shaquille O'Neal ever worked on a free throw. He could have been even that much greater of a player, in my opinion. Giannis, if he develops a mid-range jumper from 12 to 15 feet, which I think he can, he's 26 years old, still can learn, 8 years in the league, and hit maybe 60% of his free throws, he's going to be a force. And then he's going, that's like unstoppable material because then you don't know how to defend him. And I think he's going to get better at that, and he showed signs of it, like you said, John, already.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the great ones do, right? That's when you, as Roddy Piper once said, once you think you have all the answers, I change the questions, damn it.
Joe, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to ask you guys the question. Chris Paul, a lot of heat, you know, labeled a loser. I don't look at it that way. He's lost several series, but his team has been up 2-0, and he's lost a series. But I don't think it's totally his fault. You can look at that back at that mistake. But I think it's more Milwaukee winning this series, Joe, and I'll start with you, than it is the Phoenix Suns gagging it out, i.e. Chris Paul not seizing the moment, in my opinion. Joe, you first.
Nah, he didn't gag. It's like he just didn't have enough players with him. I mean, Crowder is a flop-a-saurus. If anything is close to him, he's falling down. If you're within 20 yards of him, oh, wait, you hit me. I'm falling. But, no, they had it right on Felger and Maz. It's like the team is good. It's not Chris Paul. You can't do his legacy. So it's not him. He didn't choke it. Just Milwaukee played better.
Yeah, there's a tough spot for the Suns. You know, what got them there? A lot of youth.
Yeah,
with Ayton. You know, with Bridges, you know, with Payne, and it's a tough spot to be in. You know, you're up 2-0, and then all of a sudden, you know, the pressure gets to you. You lose 2, you lose 3, and then, of course, you lose, you know, 4 in a row. So, you know, it's not on Chris Paul. I mean, it never is. I mean, yeah, sure, he's been on 4 teams to blow 2-0 leads, but when you get to the playoffs, it's never one player. So they'll be back. They'll be back next year in the mix.
Final question, guys. As far as basketball, you look at LeBron's getting older, Kawhi, little dinged up, Irving, Durant, and Harden in Brooklyn, they're kind of the faces of the franchise, almost faces of the league, if you will. But what this did, this series, be it win or lose, we saw some really good stars emerge. Crowder was the only player on both teams with finals experience. Booker and Giannis really put themselves on the map on the big stage. JC, what's your thoughts about that? Because at some point, the worm's got to turn and new players come in.
Yeah, and I think they will. I mean, you know, God, Giannis is so young. And, you know, where Dame Lillard goes, whether, you know, he comes to New York, stays in Portland, you know, wherever he goes will be huge. And, you know, even the young guys here in Boston, Tatum, Brown, I mean, the league's in good standing. Moving up, and you know, it's been an odd couple of years dealing with COVID, dealing with the bubbles, but you know, they're at that transition point because you do have those guys at the top that we've seen for so long in LeBron James that, you know, it'd be interesting to see what LA does, because do you really think Anthony Davis is a one to lead a team?
No.
For many years? I don't think so.
And if you're a Celtics fan, in the minute we have, you kind of root for Milwaukee because players gravitate to the coast, Miami, Los Angeles, glitz and glamour. Milwaukee in Wisconsin, not that way. Boston, certainly not that way, although they have some cachet. So maybe it opens up doors, and I think it's going to be good for the NBA. Forget the ratings. It's going to be good in the long run. But, guys, thank you so much for your time. Joe, obviously, always. JC, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it. Good stuff with David.
Great show,
absolutely.
Guys. Absolutely. Thanks
right,
for having me on, though.
Later. You bet, Joey. Anytime. JC, thank you, bud.
You bet. One of these days, we're going to have to get into what the WWE did to Karrion Kross this week.
That's on the back burner, but you got it. We're out. Thanks for everyone listening to the Going Old School podcast here on blogtalkradio.com. We'll see you next week at some point. Time to be determined. Take care. Be well. Be safe. and we'll talk some wrestling soon, we promise. I'll be back to you, everybody.